is the news.
British Defense Ministry has confirmed the death of seven people amid chaos near the international airport in the African capital, Kabul. Hamas condemns the latest Israeli airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip, saying that resistance groups will counter the enemy with determination. The Iranian parliament debates the proposed cabinet lineup of President Ebrahim Raisi for a second day. Everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Zanjafik. Good to have you with us. The UK Defense Ministry has confirmed the death of seven people in the midst of chaos near the national airport in the Afghan capital, Kabul. The ministry said that the deaths happened as thousands of Afghans scattered to flee after the Taliban's takeover of the country. It did not elaborate on when the incident happened, but it said that conditions on the ground remain extremely challenging. Local media or the Taliban have not commented on the latest deaths. Thousands of people, including women and children, have thronged the entry gates to the Kabul airport to find a chance to flee. Several have died due to heat or stampede over the past days. Meantime, the United States is urging its citizens in Afghanistan to avoid traveling to the Kabul airport due to what it calls potential security threats near the gates. The U.S. Embassy issued the warning without elaborating. A White House official said they had discussed counter-terrorism operations in Afghanistan, including against Daesh terrorists. The United States and its allies are still trying to evacuate thousands of their nationals and Afghans who previously worked for them, 6 days after the Taliban's takeover of the country. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says the countries are racing against time and space to evacuate people. The U.S. seeks to evacuate 15,000 Americans and up to 60,000 Afghans. Washington set itself a deadline of August 31st to complete the process. Now, the Taliban are saying that they are planning to unveil a new model for governing Afghanistan within the next few weeks. They also stressed the importance of holding a wide range of consultations with political leaders. The move has been welcomed by political circles in Afghanistan. Amin Alami reports.
Taliban leaders are busy in these days as they are facing the challenge of good governance in Afghanistan. To this end, they have decided to pick up some key steps to prove their capabilities by unveiling a new framework for governance within next days. The Taliban say they aim to keep up consultations with former high-ranking officials, prominent political leaders, and the rest of political activists in order to establish an inclusive government.
We want to establish a government in which all sides, including political groups, ethnic groups, and religious groups, have their share in. We are trying to reach an agreement with other sides in this regard. We are not after war. We are seeking peace and calm for our country.
In the meantime, top Afghan political leaders urged the Taliban to continue its efforts to attract more local and international support. This will not happen, they warn, unless the Taliban listen to the voice of people.
I do not expect the peace plan developed entirely by the U.S. to be fruitful. Therefore, regional countries need to take the initiative and work together on the issue, or at least put pressure on the U.S. to work honestly.
Taliban vote comes as thousands of Afghans seek to get out of their country via Kabul International Airport since Taliban took control over the city almost a week ago. The rising number of horrified people in and around the airport has created a big chaos there, resulting to the death of 12 so far. Two of the victims, including a member of Afghanistan's national football team, lost their lives after they fell from this flying U.S. military aircraft. The incident shocked the entire world. Taliban say they plan to investigate reported cases of atrocities by the members against civilians, including journalists. Taliban are going to set up separate teams for dealing with Afghanistan's internal security and financial crisis as well. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has reacted to the latest Israeli air raids on the besieged Gaza Strip, saying that Tel Aviv is making calculation errors. The movement said that Israel has clearly ignored the message from Palestinians and resistance groups by pounding Gaza hours after injuring dozens of protesters. By attacking Gaza, Hamas said that the Israeli regime is trying to reduce the intensity of its despair and failure in the face of the resistance front. Hamas underlined that Palestinians and resistance groups will counter the enemy with determination. Israeli warplanes pounded at least three targets in the besieged strip. Tel Aviv claimed that the airstrikes were in response to a protest marking the 52nd anniversary of the burning of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Susan, the Gaza Strip commemorated the 52nd anniversary of Al-Aqsa Mosque burning by holding a huge rally along the separating border East Gaza. Al-Aqsa Mosque was burned by an extremist Jew in 1969. Palestinian factions expressed their condemnation of Israel's long history of crimes against Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Today marks the 52nd anniversary of the burning of Al-Aqsa Mosque. This incident shows the true nature of this occupation. Palestinians here vow to continue their battle against this occupation across all occupied lands. We remain united in this endless battle with all possible means.
This rally comes in conjunction with the current Israeli violations in Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque, where Israeli regime is imposing the policy of eviction and displacement of Palestinians and keeping their killing and land-grabbing operations in an attempt to Jewidize Al-Quds and get rid of its people. The resistance declared it won't allow Israel to violate Palestinian sanctities and keep the blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip, as they agreed to activate the popular resistance and the return of clashes by the separation fence, stressing they won't remain silent over the Israeli crimes.
Palestinians have proved that they will keep their resistance in the face of all Israeli projects that aim to demolish the Palestinian identity. Al-Quds is the symbol of our history. Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque are our red lines, and we won't accept any Israeli violation of our holy sites. Israeli regime must be held accountable for any action against Al-Quds.
52 years after Al-Aqsa Mosque was set ablaze, Palestinians here call for defending Al-Quds with all possible means until its complete freedom from occupation. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
The International Criminal Court has added new cases of Palestinian home demolished by Israel to its probe into the regime's war crimes. The International Tribunal says it will review the Israeli military's razing of several structures in the village of Kirbat Humsa in the occupied Jordan Valley. The cases were sent to the ICC by Israeli NGO Combatants for Peace. Former ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Ben Souda opened the war crime probe into Israel's actions from 2014 onwards. The regime's settlement construction, raising of Palestinians' homes, and military actions in the besieged Gaza Strip are among the issues under investigation. Political commentator Bruno Beklini says that Israel is an apartheid regime that promotes ethnic cleansing in the region.
Rules for the international community, for the international system, that Israel, the Zionist entity, is an apartheid state. They are promoting ethnic cleansing since the late 20s. They never said nothing different from this, and we can prove as international studies scholars that the state of Israel is composed majority by European invaders who are still invading the Jordan Valley, Al-Quds, the West Bank, sieging Gaza, and also inside the occupied territories in 1948, they are promoting apartheid. I can barely imagine what would happen if it was promoted by the de Klerk regime, Pieter Botha regime, in the old South African apartheid, because it's quite the same. We could say that without United States support, infinite support for Israel, they could never proceed during an apartheid regime like they are doing. But also, the most important thing is not to rely on ICC. It's important, but the most important thing is to rely on the Palestinian Arabic diaspora. For example, here in Brazil, we have 60 million people from Arab descendants who are still very vinculated to the Bilad Hasham and to liberating Palestine, securing Lebanon, and liberating Syria from the Salafist invaders.
The Iranian parliament is debating the proposed cabinet lineup of President Ibrahim Raisi for a second day. The lawmakers are reviewing the qualifications of the president's picks for ministerial posts. Supporters and opponents of the nominees are given the stage to speak for or against them. This is ahead of a vote of confidence that's expected to take place on Wednesday. The president will have up to 3 months to name a replacement in case any of the proposed ministers fails to win the vote. Raisi defended his choice before the parliament on Saturday. Addressing the legislative chamber, he said that the lineup is meant to bring justice and progress. A recent report by the UN says that some 21 million people in Yemen are in dire humanitarian situation and that their condition is getting worse day after day. Abdul Latif al-Washali has a report.
The humanitarian situation in Yemen is worsening amid the ongoing Saudi war and siege. A recent report by the United Nations Population Fund suggests that 20.7 million Yemenis require humanitarian assistance, while over a million pregnant and breastfeeding women are projected to suffer from acute malnutrition throughout 2021.
Malnutrition is spreading due to a lack of food and medicine, which has had a major impact, especially on women and children. UN reports confirm that more than a million pregnant and breastfeeding women do not get enough food to meet their needs, and they are most vulnerable to diseases and epidemics. This portends another humanitarian catastrophe for Yemenis, as donor countries continue to evade their commitments to the war-torn country, which is suffering the worst humanitarian crisis in the world.
The COVID-19 pandemic, along with the torrential rain and the currency collapse, has also contributed to the deterioration of the already catastrophic humanitarian situation in Yemen, the report said. For instance, by the end of June 2021, nearly 7,000 cases of COVID-19 and more than 1,300 associated deaths had been reported amid concerns that the real number of infections were being underreported.
The humanitarian situation in Yemen has become very difficult, especially since the United Nations and donor countries have not fulfilled their pledges toward Yemenis. There is also COVID-19, which continues to spread and kill more Yemenis, amid the absence of the Ministry of Health, and there are no statistics on the epidemic in Yemen. Yemen is going through the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, according to the United Nations, amid international silence.
Earlier, the United Nations reported that it had only received half of what was required for the humanitarian response plan of 2021, which was estimated at $3.85 million, despite donors stepping up their support compared to 2020. Observers say Yemen will continue to face a devastating humanitarian situation that risks turning into famine if the international community does not act urgently. They say the only solution is to pressure Saudi Arabia to lift the siege imposed on millions of Yemenis. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
In other news, thousands have taken to the streets in central London to protest the takeover of Afghanistan by Taliban militants. Several thousand people marched toward the residence and office of Prime Minister Boris Johnson, the capital. Protesters also voiced solidarity with Afghans opposed to the militants' control over the country. The British Premier has come under sharp criticism over his government's handling of the crisis in Afghanistan. Thousands of Afghans have been trying to flee from Kabul since the Taliban took control of the city on August 14th. Now some COVID-19 news. The pandemic raging across the Americas, with several countries reporting more infections and related deaths. In Mexico, health minister officials registered more than 20,000 new infections, pushing the caseload to over 3.2 million. They also logged 847 more deaths of brain fatalities to 252,000. Meantime, in Brazil, authorities posted over 28,000 new cases in a day, taking the tally to 20 million. Some 700 more people also died of the disease. And that pushes the death tally there to more than 574,000. The Delta variant is blamed for the rise in COVID cases across the Americas. PrestaVue's analyst and website editor Mahan Abedin has died of COVID-19. As Salman Kuju reports, his death comes as the Delta variant of the coronavirus is claiming the lives of more than 500 people across Iran every single day.
Rest in peace, Mahan. Unfortunately, we have learned that one of our hard-working colleagues at PrestaVue, Mahan Abedin, has died of COVID-19 at the age of 45. Mahan Abedin was an Iranian journalist working for PrestaVue as an analyst and its website UK desk editor. He was an analyst of Middle Eastern politics. He has also authored a book titled Iran Resurgence, The Rise and Rise of the Shia State. The book mainly discusses Iran's foreign policy. Mahan Abedin was born in 1976. He gained his master's degree in political science from the London School of Economics in 2000.
Well, obviously, I'm very shocked to hear about the passing away of Mahan Abedin. Mahan Abedin was a close associate of mine. He actually was a contributor to the program that I work at and produce, Economic Divide. And through that program, we became closer. And it's truly a sad day to lose a human being, a sad day to lose a colleague, but a sad day to lose somebody who really was vibrant, was very smart, very intelligent. He contributed a lot to PrestaVue.
Right now, I've just heard this story that Mahan has died. It's very difficult to grasp. He was such a sharp person, wonderful analyst with such depth, and it's very difficult for me to believe that he's not with us. It's such a loss for us here at PrestaVue, and really, my condolences to everyone here at PrestaVue, all his friends, and more importantly, to his family.
As an analyst, he used to appear on different international news channels to analyze regional developments, especially in Iran.
Journalists have always been exposed to threats of wars and conflicts to report accurately. But the death of our colleague, Mahan Abedin, this time sounds an alarm that humanity is in an unequal battle against a virus which knows no rules or boundaries, a battle for which there is no end in sight. Salman Kujurib, Tehran.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, August 22nd, 2021. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what do you think about our broadcast? tell us which programs you like the best. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and then get your voice heard. Do remember, Listeners Special is your program, dear listener. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back, dear friends. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very important and useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers at IRIB English Radio. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us to provide a better service, a high-quality service, to our dear listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. So here, I mentioned some of the names who have sent us reception reports, including Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, one of our regular listeners. Also, Perez Mislav Zoladek from Poland has sent us an email, and Rafwan Ahmad from India has sent us an email. Here, I do appreciate those of our dear listeners who have sent us reception report, and of course we have received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program I will read their emails or letters. Shivandupol, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email from India. Also from Spain, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Arthur Fernandez Lorella. From the Netherlands, we have an email from Michelle Greenert. And from the United States, we have an email from Bill McDavid. And the last but not the least is an email from England, from Howard Barnett, one of our regular listeners. I truly appreciate these listeners for sending us these emails and letters. After a short break, I will be back with these kind messages. This is Listeners Special, and I'm back with many emails and letters from around the world from our dear listeners. First of all, we start with an email from India, from Shivandupol. Shivandupol is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, thank you for your kind email. I will try to send short audio recording clips and comments, questions about your program and Iran, and hope you can air my comments in your program, Listeners Special. With best regards, and stay safe." And salam and warmest greetings to you, Shivandupol from India, and many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio, your programs. Of course, my colleagues will send you an EQSL card for sending us this email, and many thanks for your comments. So you're going to send us short audio recording clips, comments, questions about our program and Iran. Thank you for that, and of course we will air it in your program, Listeners Special. Be sure about that. We will air, and we air right now, all comments from our dear listeners in our program and your program, Listeners Special. And that's our duty to do that. Best regards, and of course, wish you all the best. Stay safe and healthy. Write to us soon. We are waiting for those comments and views from you, Shivandupol, from India. And from Spain, one of our regular listeners, Arthur Fernandez Lorella, has sent us an email. Arthur says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, thank you very much for your kind answer to my previous email. We are all fine here, despite the coronavirus and all this terrible problem. I hope you're all fine there in Tehran too. About the reception report and the EQSL you offered me, I will be glad to receive an EQSL from you, since sending a QSL card via post is not available. I'm sending you an old reception report. Would it be possible to confirm it with your EQSL, please? Thanks a lot in advance for your help and your nice programs. Stay healthy." And salam and warmest greetings to you, Arthur Fernandez Lorella from Spain, and kind greetings from Tehran. Of course, we are getting well in Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank God. And the population is getting vaccinated day by day. We are feeling healthy and safe right now. And we hope that in your country and all over the world, of course, everyone be safe and fine. Of course, despite the coronavirus pandemic. Many thanks, Arthur, for sending us this email. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Enjoy it. And as you said, sending a paper QSL card is not available via post because of the pandemic, of course. So my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. And many thanks for writing this email to your radio station, IRIB English Radio. Arthur, in your upcoming emails, please tell us which program or programs you like the best. Tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. Wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And just after a short break, I will be back with other emails from the Netherlands this time. Welcome back from the Netherlands. We have an email from Michelle Griard. She says, "Dear friends, today I had the privilege to listen to your radio station. I'm a new radio listener since the coronavirus pandemic started in the world, and I have found this hobby very interesting. That is listening to the world radios via short and medium wave. Please find my reception report attached to this email. I include also an MP3 file to prove that I have listened to your radio. I hope you will verify this report. Sincerely yours." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Michelle Griard, from the Netherlands. I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name, because I don't know Dutch. Anyway, many thanks, Michelle, for sending us this email. And of course, it's an honor to have you with us. If it's a privilege to listen to IRIB English Radio, it's an honor for us to find another listener from around the world, this time from the Netherlands. Michelle, many thanks for sending us this email. So you started listening to different radio stations in the time of coronavirus pandemic? That's great. It's a great hobby, of course. I think besides being a hobby, listening to radio adds to our information. It has a news part. It has information about different countries. For example, in our radio, we air different programs about our country, Iran, like Close Up Iran, Iranian Market, different programs about our country. We have the news section. So besides being a hobby, it can be an informative source about different countries. So welcome. We wish you all the best, Michelle, from the Netherlands. We have received your MP3 file, and my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Enjoy it. Write to us soon, Michelle. We wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Tell us your views in that email to us. Well, from Bill McDavid from the United States, we have an email. Bill says, I heard your broadcast today on shortwave radio and especially enjoyed your program discussing the heat wave and fire problems around the world. You are heard very well here in Florida, United States. I would very much appreciate a QSL card from your station if possible. I will be listening to your English service via shortwave in the future. Keep up the good work. First of all, warmest greetings to you. Hello and salam, Bill McDavid from the US. And many thanks for writing this email to us. So you enjoy one of our programs about the heat wave, about the warming and fire problems around the world. Thank God you enjoyed it. We are glad that you heard it. So you're from Florida and you received our signals in your region, in Florida. So write to us soon, Bill. Tell us your views about our Arab English radio programs. Tell us which programs you like the best. And try to listen to those of our programs about our country to have a real picture and a real image of our country. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, Bill McDavid. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from England, from Howard Barnett. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program. And as I said, here we have an email from Howard Barnett from England. Howard says, Dear sir, madam, tonight I tuned into your radio station via internet, where I am using a tablet, and I heard you with excellent reception, except for a short break in transmission. What I heard was first a station announcement, and this was followed by some music. I don't know if you verify reception reports via the internet, but if you do, then a QSL card along with anything else you care to send me will be very much appreciated. Sent to the address above. Thank you. Yours sincerely. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Howard Barnett from England. And we do appreciate you for sending us this email. So you tuned in to IRB English Radio via internet. That's great. Maybe via our website. So where you are using a tablet and you heard it with excellent reception. That's great. Thank God you enjoyed it. So you caught up station announcement followed by music. Of course, we have different sections in our broadcast. We have the news part. We have different programs. So we hope that in your upcoming emails or letters, you tell us your views about our programs. You tell us which program or programs you like the best. Generally, reflecting your outlook toward IRB English radio programs. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card because sending a paper QSL card is not possible in the time of coronavirus pandemic. So we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Howard Barnett from England. We wish you all the best. And now, dear listeners, I think here we have to skip to the next section of our program, which is this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. We hope you'll enjoy it.
My name is Ibrahima.
Well, I finished from the International Institute of Journalism here in Abuja. That is the headquarters of Nigeria. And also I make studies. I study in Germany, I study in France, and I study in some parts of African countries. I am not actually a journalist. I'm working with a radio station here in Kaduna. And I also send reports to so many other radio stations around the globe. Well, I must have my kind of job I do is that I have so many things I do. Like I do give part, take part-time lectures. I give to some of these part-time university and deliver lectures on French and German language as a part-time lecturer. And I have so many activities that I used to do. I'm a presenter in a radio station and then so many other things. Well, the English service radio station, firstly, I must tell you the fact that I attach and I cherish firstly the style of the presentation that is coming up from the broadcasters. I first listen, it's my orientation that I have to even at the Institute of Journalism. When I used to approach my lecturer on the style of news I used to hear from the English service, it's quite different from our own local radio station here. So I am adapted to the radio station that is the Iran English service because I learned so many things with them, and as such, I put it into my practice before I became a serious, like a senior reporter here. So it really helped me because I listened to the style of the presentation first, and the presenters are always, I don't know how they organize their reporters, but it's something that I just discovered. I always learn something from their reporters, the style of the presentation, the way they organize the room. But I must have to say that I discover most of the news is basically Arab region reports and the news always within the region and some parts from the Africa, little, but sometimes from Asia, little. But the much of the news is emphasizing mostly on the region of the Arab, most especially Iran. I must say I learned so many things from that radio station. I must say big thanks to them. I keep on listening because I benefited so many things from them so far. Big thanks go to all the listeners, fans, love, all over the world listening to International Radio of Iran. Big thanks to you, and I just want you to know that Iran Radio remains one of the untouchable and reliable, best information circulation, best in all time of news discovery. The first always to bring the breaking news, ready to give you all whatever I would. My best regards to all those listeners all over the world. I wish you the best, and I wish you keep on listening to this best radio station. Best is what I give you, and the radio is ready to give you the best.
Wishing you all the best. Here we wrap up this week's edition of Listener's Special. Keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. 3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. This time, Israel continues to step on international law. This time, the regime in Tel Aviv has launched 24 missiles against Syria, and it did this from Lebanon. So not only has it ignored Lebanese sovereignty, but it has launched attacks against Syria. There should be outrage in the international community with these blatant attacks on international law. But remember, the culprit is Israel. So many countries simply look the other way. We're going to start it off by crossing over to Damascus and talking to Mohammed Ali. Mohammed Ali, good to see you. Well, tell us, inform us about this latest situation, what took place.
Yes, what happened was that on Thursday, Israel attacked Syria from Lebanese airspace. Israeli fighter jets carried out the attack, firing a large number of missiles from southeast Lebanon, according to the military in Syria, an official military source. Of course, those missiles targeted areas around Damascus and areas around the city of Homs. After that, the foreign ministry here sent letters in Syria, sent letters to the United Nations Security Council and Secretary General, calling on the international body to shoulder its responsibility in preserving international peace and security, take measures to prevent future Israeli attacks, and also hold Israel accountable for what it described as its as Israel's terrorism and crimes. The foreign ministry made it clear, similar to other, of course, letters sent on similar occasions, Israeli airstrikes, made it clear that those Israeli airstrikes are aimed and at actually boosting the morale of the remaining terrorist groups inside Syria. The foreign ministry asserted and stressed that such Israeli attacks will not block or hinder the Syrian army from carrying out its mission in defeating the remaining terrorist groups in Syria, mainly Daesh and the al-Nusra Front. And finally, very important point, which is that after 24 hours of this attack, the Russian Ministry of Defense announced some details saying that the Syrian, the Russian-made Syrian air defenses were able to shoot down 22 out of 24 Israeli missiles, and that the two that were not downed did not actually kill any Syrian military personnel or cause any damage to the infrastructure. This is the second time that Russia announces details about Syria's downing of Israeli missiles, in what is seen over here by analysts as an indirect message from Russia that it will not allow Israel to cause any more damage in its attacks on Syria.
All right. Thank you so much for that update. That's Mohammed Ali out of Damascus. Now I'd like to introduce my guest to the spotlight. Out of New York, author and journalist Jim Kavanaugh. And out of Halstead, historian and journalist Fred Youngers.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's start this off in New York with Jim. What do you see as the main reason, the main goal that these attacks continue by Israel? I mean, what's their goal at this point in time?
Well, your correspondent said something which I think is true, which is that Israel, along with the United States, wants to maintain the regime change war in Syria. And they have not given up on that, and they want to weaken the Syrian government as much as possible. They'd like to turn Syria into a failed state, as they did with Libya. So Israel is going to constantly be attacking Syria, and they're going to be now. They always claim they're attacking Hezbollah formations in Syria and Hezbollah facilities, and of course Hezbollah is also a target of theirs that they really don't like to have around because Hezbollah is becoming too strong. So Hezbollah, the Israelis have been, you know, for decades destroying the strong resistance states around them, turning them into failed states and jihadi havens. That's what they tried to do with Syria. They've failed so far because of the Russian help and the Russian intervention. But you've got to see, they have not given up, and the Americans have not given up. American troops are still occupying one-third of Syria, including its oil reserves and its best wheat-producing regions. And as you know, for all the Americans' complaints about what kind of whether the Taliban would give refuge to al-Qaeda, it was an American administration official a couple of years ago who said the largest safe haven for al-Qaeda in the world is in Idlib. And that's the case. The Americans were protecting al-Qaeda and al-Nusra and the remnants of al-Qaeda. So, but this is part of the plan to destroy certainly the secular nationalist states and all states that are resisting Israeli aggression, and that Israel wants to have and will be given as much as possible by the United States impunity to attack any country around it in any way it sees fit.
Well, Brett, how do you see it? I mean, when we look at the situation, 22 of the 24 missiles that Israel fired were intercepted by aircraft with the anti-missile fire from the Syrian military. And as our analysts, our correspondent said earlier, that actually Russia has made a point of announcing this so the Israelis know what's going on. Your perspective about why you think Russia is rushing to announce this situation, and does it show that there is a change in Russia's strategy in dealing with Israel in the situation of Syria?
Well, I could certainly hope so, indeed. That it is an encouraging fact that that twice already now Russia has come out with the news, confirming, of course, reports that came from Syria, knowing, of course, full well that Russia in the international community has somewhat of a bigger pull and a bigger credibility, unfortunately, of course, because the powers that be generally don't listen to countries like Syria. But when Russia speaks up, there is a more, it is a larger gravitas, of course, to these claims. And that now we can be quite certain, indeed, that 22 out of the 24 missiles that were fired by Israeli aircraft, incidentally fired from within Lebanese airspace, apparently, were indeed downed and were completely unsuccessful in reaching any strategic or crucial infrastructure or kill anyone in Syria at all. This is a major victory in and of itself, of course, of the development of the resistance in the Middle East in general. And the fact that Russia announced this could be, of course, I remain carefully optimistic in this regard, could herald a more active role of Russia in actively calling out the powers of the West and the Zionists in the region. Of course, we always have to bear in mind that Russia did a lot of work in helping the Syrian Arab Republic in repelling the Daesh terrorists and Al-Qaeda and other groups that were backed by the West and that were sent to destroy Syria. The Russian aid in this regard has been of crucial importance, of course. But so far, Russia has kind of neglected for a long part, the past couple of years, to call out the powers that are really behind all of this actively. Most importantly, in this regard, being Israel. Israel has been carrying out airstrikes against Syria for years without declaring war, without any official state of conflict existing between the Zionist entity and Syria. But we have very often, even though this has risked Russian lives, we have very rarely seen an official Russian call-out and Russian condemnation of what is going on here. Of course, because Russia at the same time tries to, let's say, play both sides. They have this realpolitik going on, which, of course, they don't want to antagonize the Western powers too much. And antagonizing Israel means antagonizing the Western powers to the west of the Russian borders. But, of course, at one point, enough is enough. And this is an interesting concept we have seen right now. And I think this has to do with the fact that Israel has gotten more brazen. They have gotten way more aggressive in the past couple of months, especially with Israeli Zionist leaders trying to show off their like, quote-unquote bravery and their militancy, and that way trying to take away attention from the massive economic and political turmoil that has existed in Israel over the past couple of months. And I think this has led Russia to side more obviously with the resistance front that exists in Western Asia, in this case particularly Syria, in calling out these attacks as they happen. Aside from that, the fact that these attacks were shut down, 22 out of 24 were successfully intercepted, means that what has been going on for a while already is confirmed, being that the air superiority, the undisputed air superiority that the Zionists had in the region for decades, is coming to an end. We have modern equipment coming into Syria from Iran, from Russia, and from other backers of the resistance. And we have gotten an increased capability and strength in terms of defensive measurements, both in missile defense and in missile attack as well, in from the resistance powers in the region. We're talking particularly Hezbollah and the Syrian Arab Republic. They have shown time and time again, especially now, the capacity to push back against what was considered at one point, of course, the most advanced air force in the entire Middle East.
All right. What do you think about that, Jim? Because the once, as the Israelis like to call themselves at one point in time, being invincible, obviously that was never the case, but it's even showing itself more and more now as there's a little bit more equity, even with this anti-missile system that the Syrians have used. How is that affecting the Israeli mentality in general? As Brett had said, we're seeing them being more and more arrogant these days. But overall, how do you assess the situation?
Yeah, I want to be careful about this. I think it is definitely true that the Syrian state, and with the help of the Russian intervention, has more capability to defend itself from Israeli air power. Israeli air power is still dominant. There's nothing like it in the region, okay? Mm-hmm. But Russian air defenses are very, very good. Now, I think they've given the Syrians S-400s, which is a very good air defense system. But the S-500 would be even better. But they have been restrained in their allowance of letting the Syrians use that to the fullest extent, okay? They're not going to give them the S-500. And they don't want to, for example, they probably could. They don't want to shoot down those Israeli airplanes that are hanging back over Lebanon and firing missiles into Syria, okay? They're going to let those, they've let those Israeli airplanes go. And they're saying, they did say in July and last night that the Russians helped the Syrians use these systems in a way that was more effective. So you've got this very little dangerous game going on. The Israelis are more aggressive. They want to push more aggressively. They don't want to let things keep developing in a way that's going to progressively weaken them. On the other hand, the Russians want to control the level at which things escalate. So they don't want to see direct attacks on Israeli planes. This is a very tricky little situation. So that's, I think, you know, we have to see how that's going to develop. It's unclear. The Israelis are going to get more aggressive, especially since what happened in Afghanistan. They know that the political pressure in the United States now, what they're going to use is the fact that there's political pressure in the United States now that the U.S. should never back down. And they're going to have to, Biden is going to have to feel he has to make up for his loss in Afghanistan by showing how strong he is in other places and by never backing down on his support of Israel. Should the Syrian Arab army, the Syrian army using his Russian missiles, shoot down an Israeli plane over Lebanese airspace, even one that's attacking them, it would be legitimate for them to do that, but it would be a big escalation, and everybody knows it. So it's a little tricky. The United States is never going to accept anything that is a direct threat to Israel, and everybody is aware of that and has to be aware of that. And the Russians are playing very carefully, have been and still are playing very carefully with that.
Well, Jim, what do you think it would take? What do you think it's going to take? Jim was talking about that the Russians are playing very carefully. But if this situation continues to escalate, and according to both of you, your analysis is that it definitely will, the Israelis are going to get more aggressive. I mean, somewhere down the line, either it's going to happen, as he said, maybe the Syrians will end up shooting down an Israeli plane, or it may force the hands of the Russians to get a little bit more involved. I mean, what do you think it will take for Russia to cross that line and basically say enough is enough, especially after they have invested in the defense of the Syrian people?
Yeah, I'm afraid that at the rate in which things are going now, it is quite possible that Russia will only be able to be pulled over the hedge, let's say, in consistently defending Syria, only after, at a certain point, an Israeli attack would end up killing Russian servicemen. Because, of course, there are a multitude of Russian allies who are either in military means or in technical support or in intelligence, who are in Syria helping the Syrians, coordinating the war against terrorist militias and groups in regions such as Idlib. And there is going to be the constant threat, of course. Every single one of these attacks against Syria risks, in the end, also affecting Russian servicemen. So I could see an escalation coming in that regard once a Russian were to die in one of these Israeli attacks. Unfortunately, this is an unfortunate fact in a way, because in a completely just world, let's say, in which the gears of society and the gears of world politics were to grind more fairly, then the world would agree that Russia and Syria are already well within the right to shoot down these Israeli planes as soon as they start firing missiles against Syria, or as soon as they violate Lebanese airspace with aggressive intentions against Syria. But unfortunately, you have this sort of what they call a 3D chess game going on in Moscow, in which they are trying to weigh off all the options. But from the Syrian point of view, of course, this Russian carefulness doesn't exactly help Syria very much, because these attacks keep on happening and happening. And as indeed has been said by the other guests, the Israelis are more likely than not to get even more aggressive and more bloodthirsty as the time goes on, because Israel at this point in time is in some ways kind of a wounded animal. It's not dying yet, not immediately, but it has gotten several beatings over the past couple of years, and we know this because even the former chief of the internal intelligence and security service, the Shin Bet in Israel, has a couple of years ago said that in his opinion, the way things are going now, Israel will not survive the coming generation, even if it's just because of demographic issues in which the Israelis are facing, which I can't get into right now. But this means that Israel is facing a very existential threat. Zionism as a concept, as an entity, is facing an existential crisis, and they know this. And the only way that they know of to solve a problem like this is by going somewhere and killing some more people, but hopefully that way beating the war and getting the fires of patriotism further going. So when this keeps on going, it's only a matter of time before attacks against Russia, against Syria escalate. And unfortunately, in time, this might involve the loss of life on the Russian side as well.
Jim, your take. I mean, how